For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Martin McCloskey on fire. This is Mark McCloskey on fire.
Not getting no down.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey, Mark McCloskey on fire. And you know, every time I look at the news, every time I watch television, every time I look at the internet, I'm just absolutely amazed. But you know what I'm amazed at is what the heck is wrong with the American public where they just tolerate this stuff in a way that you just cannot imagine. How we can let our government lie to us and spend our money and destroy this country intentionally and just sit back and take it, I just can't understand. My best example this week is Haiti. I don't know how many of you know anything about Haiti. Haiti is the western edge of an island called Hispaniola, which was first place that Columbus landed in the New World 500 and X number of years ago. Now I can't do that math in my head. But it has been, since it won its independence, which I bet they wish they hadn't done now from France, it has been the most corrupt, bloodthirsty, lawless country in the history of the world, constantly supported by governments that, guess who, Uncle Sam has instituted through all kinds of nefarious processes. You know, Haiti is currently ruled by gangs, currently ruled by mobsters, currently ruled by a guy by the name of Jimmy Barbecue Chevrier, a street gang member, a guy who's a leader of a gang called the G9. They call him Barbecue because he likes to set his political opponents on fire. His gang are cannibals. They've actually posted a video of one of his gang members pulling the flesh off a burning body and eating it. These people run the state, the country of Haiti. Well, they demanded, these street gangs, demanded that the prime minister resign. Well, the prime minister of Haiti tried to land in the country where he's allegedly the prime minister of last weekend, and the gangs would not allow his plane to land. And they demanded that he'd resign or there'd be civil war. Like, there's not civil war now. And so he leaves. He doesn't land. He goes elsewhere. And the gangs now control 80% of the capital city of Port-au-Prince. But, I mean, this is when Donald Trump talked about sh-hole countries. This was the kind of sh-hole country that he was talking about. And my producer is making a little note now so he can take the SH out of my speech. But as I always say, if it's good enough for President Trump, it's good enough for me. Here's the thing. You got this country, which we have poured billions and billions and billions of dollars into, particularly after their most recent earthquake, to shore up their government, to give it some stability, to make them like us better, which always works, throwing money at a population that's completely berserk and completely lawless is like it's going to make some difference. But so now we've got this cannibal gang led by Mr. Barbecue in charge of Haiti. So what does the United States government decide to do to fix this problem? Well, what does the United States government always do? It shovels out money. So we've got our illustrious Secretary of Defense. We've got Mr. Blinken, not Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State. Anthony Blinken goes down to meet in Central America. He's in Kingston, Jamaica, meeting with the powers that be of these Caribbean nations, where he pledges to increase American support from $100 million to an additional $200 million, which brings U.S. total support to $300 million for the effort. What are we going to do in Haiti with $300 million of your money and mine? We are going to hire soldiers from Kenya to come over to Haiti to do what? Well, the Kenyans don't quite know yet. They don't have an army yet. They're putting together Kenyan's interior minister, Kuthuri Kingitiki, said earlier Monday that Kenyan troops are currently in the pre-deployment stage, meaning they're trying to find some people to put in uniforms to come over and do something in Haiti. But What are the troops? What are the, let's say Kenya could actually generate some troops, generate an army, which they're then going to send over to Haiti in the Caribbean, right? Like, didn't Haiti like have a revolution to cast off colonialism, 150 years ago or so? And now we're going to import a colonial power to take over Haiti to restore their democracy. But who would the Kenyan soldiers be fighting on behalf of? If the government is now run by these street gangs, and by the way, the 28 of the 30 senators in Haiti are gangsters, people with convictions for drug crimes, that the mobs are the government of Haiti. If we're going to spend $300 million to hire soldiers from Africa to go and take over in 100% black population of Haiti in the Caribbean, who are they going to be fighting on behalf of? Are they going to be fighting on behalf of Barbecue and his cannibal soldiers? Are they going to be fighting on behalf of the government which has resigned? Are they going to be fighting on behalf of the government which is made up of drug criminals that are the gangsters themselves? And on top, I'm laughing because it is so absurd, it's unrealistic. On top of the $300 million we're going to spend to send Kenyan troops to Haiti to fight on behalf of who the hell knows, we're going to spend another $33 million for humanitarian aid. Well, humanitarian aid, what does that mean? That means giving money to NGOs, non-governmental organizations, which translate to Mr. Cannibal Barbecue to spend as he damn well pleases. I'll bet he's already out there looking at that villa in Switzerland and trying on Rolls Royces and Lamborghinis for size. But what are $33 million for humanitarian aid? Well, it just makes you wonder how much of that $33 million is going to go directly back through the Clinton Initiative for World Peace, directly back to the DNC. I mean, this whole organization is so stinking corrupt. Well, I've got a little bit of information here on the government of Haiti for those of you. And by the way, I was meeting with an old supporter of my Senate campaign and a contributor, and a guy who's 10 years older than me. And I said, "Well, what do you know about Haiti?" I said, "You remember Papa Doc and Baby Doc, who were the dictators of Haiti?" Nah, he had never heard of them. Billions of your tax dollars and mine going to a country where a guy that pays attention to politics didn't know the history of this country. Nobody does, because our government doesn't want you to know. There's a guy named Papa Doc, Francois Duvalier. He was a dictator of Haiti from 1957 until 1971. His son, Jean-Claude Duvalier, Baby Doc, was a dictator from 71 until 86. These people ruled Haiti with an iron fist. They were criminals. They were mobsters. They stole all the money. They exploited the population, and they were notorious dictatorial thugs, okay? So United States government goes in, CIA decides to start destroying the government and putting in people. I'm going to read the list just by the tenure in office of all the presidents of Haiti since Baby Doc was thrown out. All right, here's one. Served 2 years. One served 134 days. Next one, 89 days. Next one, 1 year, 236 days. Next one, 3 days. Next one, 331 days. Next one, 234 days. Next one, 9 days, right? These are all presidents of Haiti since 1986, right? 255 days, 361 days, 331 days, 153 days, 1 year, 118 days, 5 years, woohoo, 3 years, 22 days, 2 years, 75 days. Does this sound like a stable government to you, thanks to the United States and our lovely CIA? Oop, I got one more page here before we get to the guy that resigned this week. 5 years, 4 years, 269 days, 7 days, 359 days, 4 years, 150 days, 13 days. And then our recent Prime Minister, Ariel Henry, who 2 years before he resigned last weekend because they wouldn't let him land at his own airport. So what is the United States government doing, right, to help us out, to turn the United States, intentionally turn our country into one of these shithole countries? The United States is flying in airplanes directly from Port-au-Prince to the United States. They've flown in the last 15 months 138,000 1,000 Haitians under what they call the pardon program, where they get to come to the country and live here for 2 years and then come up with the reason why they should be allowed to stay. Well, your government, with your tax dollars, is flying these bums from the most dangerous country in the world, the most worthless segment of humanity, into your country to pollute the population, to destroy our civilization. And guess what? They're getting their airfare for free. They get their stay here for free. I guarantee you they're getting their cell phone and their monthly stipend and a free place to live. And by the way, one of these nice, lovely Haitians just raped some teenage disabled girl last weekend who came here on the goddamn pardon program. 138,000 of them flown here for free on your tax dollars and mine. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, how many of our plane tickets, how many of your plane tickets the last time you flew home to see your mom for Christmas, or the last time you flew out to see your kids at college, or the last time you flew someplace to get a new job or to go on vacation, how many of those plane trips were paid for by the federal government? How many times has your cell phone been paid for by the federal government? How many times has your health care been paid for by the federal government? How many times has your apartment or your home mortgage been paid for by the United States government? Why are we sitting around allowing our government to give all these freebies, not just to illegal aliens, but to people that we are flying in? These aren't people that walk through the desert of Mexico and then brave the torrent of the wee little stream called the Rio Grande and crawled through barbed wire fences and turned themselves in to Customs and Border Control. No, these are people your government is recruiting in foreign countries, including Haiti, putting them on airplanes at our expense and flying them here. Why in the world would we ever put up with this? Why in the world would we ever vote a single vote for any member of Congress unless they would pledge, we will not tolerate this any longer. We will not spend a single dollar of American tax dollars to bring these people into the country. How does it possibly help? Look at the history of Haiti. Look at the history of Haiti going back to 1957, a year after I was born, and look at what's happened. No matter how much money we throw at that country, no matter how many times the CIA has destabilized their government and put in puppet rulers, no matter how many billions of dollars we've given them, week after week, year after year, generation after generation, it has just been a mess. These are people that are incapable of governing themselves. They're incapable of pretending to have a civilization. These are people who cannot possibly not only help themselves, but they cannot possibly improve the United States by bringing them here. What is the purpose of government? The purpose of our government should be to protect us from foreign aggression and to make this country safe for American citizens to work hard and prosper with as little interference in their day-to-day lives as humanly possible. What do we have as a current government? We've got a government that views its job as destroying Western civilization, as doing everything it can within its power to weaken the United States internally, weaken the United States externally, and what they would like, what those people in D.C., what the people in the mainstream media, what those people that we send to Congress and the Senate, what they want to do is to depower the United States, to depower the people, to reduce our influence around the world, to reduce our military might, to reduce our economic might, to increase our dependence on foreign supplies of energy, and just to destroy Western civilization. They view being white, being Christian, being self-reliant as unacceptable, as being the antithesis of what they view for the history of the world. What they want is to have a dominant power elite, this new world order, this great reset, where a small number of intellectual elites control a vast population, although greatly reduced, of slaves, of illiterate, untrained, unreliant, basic savages. And we're bringing them in not by just the hundreds of thousands, but by the millions. And you think about it. I was watching, and I'll digress just shortly. I was watching the head of the Fed, Powell, being interviewed by the House 2 days ago. I guess more than that, maybe on the 6th. And they're asking him questions. And one liberal congresswoman is asking, well, isn't it true that the Congressional Budget Office has determined that because of immigrant labor, the output of the United States domestic product is going to be increased by $7 trillion over the next 10 years. And he says, well, if you get more people here and some of them go to work, if more people are working, there'll be more output, so it's just math. Think about this. You bring in millions of people. They're all illegal. They can't legally get a job. If they get a job, they're in the black market where their money isn't going to get paid in taxes. If they've got a job where they're getting paid with your tax dollars, right? And you can't increase your economy by taking money out of the taxpayers' hands, having the majority of it wasted through the bureaucratic process, and then handing it to an illegal alien and calling that an increase in gross national product. But nobody talks about that. Well, here's the thing. We have to stand up for ourselves. The fact that we tolerate for 1 second in this country that our government is spending our money to fly on jet airplanes from Port-au-Prince, Haiti, to the New York airport or to St. Louis airport or to the Los Angeles airport, fly at our expense Haitians to try to hasten the demise of this country, to create in America that which we have in Port-au-Prince, to create in the United States a civilization run by people like Barbecue and his cannibal horde. Well, ladies and gentlemen, call up your congressman, call up your House representative, call up your senator and say, we will not vote for you unless you promise us, unless you guarantee, you swear on your mother's lives, that you will not give one more penny to bring destruction to this country on our nickel. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. Later on in the program, we're going to have the Attorney General of the state of Missouri to talk about youth violence and what's going on internally in this country. And I'm going to be right back with some more of the World in Review.
Fighting against totalitarianism. More Mark McCloskey on Fire coming up. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Mark McCloskey, on fire. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on Fire.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey, Mark McCloskey on Fire. We usually start the first segment with my rant about how everything that you hear in the media, everything you hear from politicians, regardless of their party affiliation, regardless of whether they are MSNBC or CNN or Fox for that matter, is lies and nothing but lies. But you know, the problem right now is that the powers that be don't care what they say to you anymore because they think you are a complete stinking moron and they can say whatever they want to and you'll believe it because the mainstream media keeps dwelling on it time after time after time. And the one thing that you can absolutely count on as being the truth is the exact opposite of anything that you're told by mainstream media or anybody in elected office. And I mean just about anybody in elected office, regardless of their party affiliation. And they no longer care how obviously hypocritical and self-contradictory their statements are because they don't think you have the intelligence to listen to it, they don't think you've got the memory to retain it, and they don't think you can differentiate truth from lies even when they're said in the same breath by the same guy, even when the two statements by the same speaker are mutually exclusive and contained in the same sentence because they think you're just dumb as a brick, dumb as a sack of hammers, and will believe everything you're told. So what's my favorite one from this week? Well, there's a guy named Viktor Orban. He's the president or prime minister of the country of Hungary. Hungary is a Central European country. It's a NATO ally. It was celebrating recently its 25th anniversary as a member of NATO. Well, Viktor Orban recently came to the United States. And what did he do when he came to the United States? Well, he went down to Florida and met with President Trump at Mar-a-Lago. Oh, my God, he met with Donald Trump. He's a Trump supporter. You might recall that Tucker Carlson's interviewed him a couple of times about the fact that Hungary is a place with no, count them, no illegal immigration. It's a Christian country, very strict, traditional, family-oriented, nationally-oriented country. run by a guy who respects the integrity of the Hungarian culture, the Hungarian people, and wishes to preserve it as a traditional, God-fearing Christian country. Well, what could cause the hatred of the power structure in this country anything more than that, right? So this guy comes, Viktor Orban comes and meets with Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago. And so this, of course, incenses Joe Biden because Orban didn't meet with anybody from the Biden administration. He's here, just the evil Donald Trump. And therefore, if he meets with Donald Trump, he's got to be a dictator because we all know that Donald Trump only loves dictators. And so by definition, you go have dinner with Donald Trump, you're a dictator and you're a threat to democracy. So Joe Biden is giving a speech at a fundraiser, at a campaign event, and he says that Viktor Orban doesn't like democracy. He wants a dictatorship. Well, needless to say, this pissed off the Prime Minister of Hungary. By the way, they're a NATO ally. They're supposed to be on our side, and we're supposed to be on their side. Hungarian government issues a statement saying, you know, we will not tolerate lies, even if they're told by the President of the United States. And you show me one instance when Viktor Orban had said anything about being in not liking democracy and wanting to be a dictator, wanting a dictatorship. And so the government of Hungary calls in David Pressman. David Pressman is the United States ambassador to Hungary, to have him explain why it was that Joe Biden would launch this attack on Viktor Orban. And so he comes in, he gets called on the carpet, and they ask him, identify a single time when Viktor Orban or anybody in our government said that what we wanted was a dictatorship. Of course, they couldn't do it because it never happened. But then guess what? On the 25th anniversary of Hungary joining NATO and becoming one of our allies after casting off the yoke of communism, David Pressman goes into a tirade against Viktor Orban and the government of Hungary in a way that's just hard to imagine. I'm going to spend some time on this because it's just amazing. This is a report on that meeting, on that speech that David Pressman gave. The U.S. ambassador to Hungary has said Washington will act in response to Budapest, quote, dangerously unhinged anti-American messaging and expanding its relationship with Russia. Also accusing the Hungarian government of rampant corruption and undermining independent institutions. Of course, one of the things that that Prime Minister Orban talked about with Donald Trump was ending the war in Ukraine, stopping United States financing of Ukraine's war against Russia, and that if Donald Trump were president, there would have been no war, and when Donald Trump gets reelected, the war will end. Well, that makes you a Putin slave, right? That makes you a Putin pawn. My best quote from this is, that we cannot ignore it when the Speaker of Hungary's National Assembly asserts that Putin's war in Ukraine is actually led by the United States. Well, what does everybody in Congress say these days? What does the mainstream media say? The mainstream media says that if we don't give as much money as Ukraine wants for as long as they want it, they'll lose the war. They'll be taken over by Russia. Well, that would mean that without the United States participating in that war, there'd be no war. That kind of makes us, the kind of makes the war in Ukraine being led by the United States. But here is what David Pressman has to say. Quote, we can neither understand nor accept the Prime Minister identifying the United States as a top adversary of our ally Hungary, even though he is our ally Hungary, or his assertion that the United States government is trying to overthrow the Hungarian government, literally to defeat him. Okay, David Pressman says, how dare this evil Prime Minister of Hungary say that we're trying to defeat him and undermine his government? But in his very next breath, he says, while the Orban government may want to wait out the United States government, i.e. wait until Donald Trump gets elected, the United States will certainly not wait out the Orban administration. While Hungary waits, we will act. Okay? In other words, we'll throw him out. Here's my favorite part. Hungary advocates for the electoral candidates around the world, from Poland to Brazil, all while decrying foreign interference here at home, the ambassador emphasized. Who leads the United States government, or any government, is a question for the people of that country alone to decide. I'm going to read that again. Who leads the United States government, or any government, is a question for the people of that country alone to decide. Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer, who, here's this article. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat, New York, America's top Jewish elected official, sharply criticized Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his handling of the Gaza war, and has called for new elections in Israel. So he got our ambassador to Hungary saying, who leads the United States government, or any government, is a question for the people of that country alone to decide. And Chuck Schumer saying, the Prime Minister of Israel has to go, and we have to have new elections. Gee, are these things mutually exclusive? Gee, can they both be said by the same government? And just to emphasize how much we're not threatening the government in Hungary, just to emphasize how much Prime Minister Orban is wrong when he says the United States are trying to take over and destroy his government, here's another quote from David Pressman. No doubt you've noticed at this point that we do not ordinarily give speeches like this in other allied countries. Quote, with other allies we engage, we collaborate, we work together. Even where we have differences, here, that doesn't work until we act. In other words, we're not going to work with Hungary. We're not going to cooperate. We're not going to engage. We're not going to collaborate. We will act. We will destroy his government. And you got to ask yourself why. Once again, I repeat, Christian, right-wing, conservative, traditional family values, no immigration, Hungary for Hungarians. How about make Hungary great again? How about Hungary first politics? Kind of sounds like what Donald Trump might say in the United States. Make America great again. Put America first. The animosity towards that kind of thought of actually putting Americans ahead of foreigners, just like the arrogance of the Hungarian Prime Minister to put the interest of Hungarians ahead of the mob invasion that has taken over and diminished so many other European countries. Just something that our government cannot tolerate. Can't tolerate Netanyahu, can't tolerate Viktor Orban, can't tolerate anybody who won't work towards the weakness of individual states and work towards a single world socialist government, which, of course, is what all of this is about. You can't have Prime Minister Viktor Orban having a strong, independent, nationalistic Hungary because having governments that think for themselves and act on behalf of their own people is antithetical to a single world socialist government, which is antithetical to the Great Reset, antithetical to the New World Order. And so the powers of the United States have to be used to crush it. The problem right now is that the powers that be don't care what they say to you anymore because they think you're a complete stinking moron and they can say whatever they want to and you'll believe it because the mainstream media keeps dwelling on it time after time after time. And the one thing that you can absolutely count on as being the truth is the exact opposite of anything that you're told by mainstream media or anybody in elected office. And I mean just about anybody in elected office, regardless of their party affiliation. And they no longer care how obviously hypocritical and self-contradictory their statements are because they don't think you have the intelligence to listen to it. They don't think you've got the memory to retain it. And they don't think you can differentiate truth from lies, even when they're said in the same breath by the same guy, even when the two statements by the same speaker are mutually exclusive and contained in the same sentence, because they think you're just dumb as a brick, dumb as a sack of hammers, and will believe everything you're told. Of course, you know, Hungary is being called by David Pressman an authoritarian state, that they have state-run media, that the political opponents are called, their political adversaries are called terrorists or extremists, and the press that doesn't agree with the government is called the enemy of the people. Gee, I wonder where else we've heard that. But, of course, they're not as free and as democratic as the country of Ukraine, where the president has suspended elections, where he has put his political adversaries in jail, where he has created a single state media, where he's outlawed Christian sects. We can't be, you know, obviously Hungary can't be as free and democratic as a wonderful country of Ukraine. And, you know, as my buddy Tucker Carlson has pointed out, why do we hate Russia so much in this country? It might be that it's the world's largest Christian nation and still has things like laws against LGBTQ and all those kinds of things which the liberals adore and which are directly responsible for diminishing the power and integrity of this country. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this, amongst everything else, are the reasons why we just have to stand up and say no. Stand up and be a free people. Stand up and say we will be the people that make America great again. We will be the people that make America first again, and that we will do whatever is in the interest of American people, because that's who our government is supposed to represent. Our government's not going to do it. We're going to have to do it ourselves. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with the Attorney General of Missouri, Andrew Bailey, in just a second.
Fighting against the New World Order. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on Fire.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey, Mark McCloskey on Fire. Well, even outside of St. Louis this week, I think the entire country and maybe the entire world was horrified to see a video that went viral of a 16-year-old St. Louis County girl who was savagely beaten next to her school by a 15-year-old. And I'm going to play the video here. It's shocking. It's hard to watch. We're going to play it with a sound going because it is horrifying. But you know, some people who are running for office in this country have said you can't play this video, it's too shocking. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you should be shocked. This is happening all over the country. It's happening all over your city and my city, and we have to be aware of it if we're going to stop it. So I'm going to play the video now, then we're going to bring in the Attorney General of Missouri, Andrew Bailey, to talk about this culture of violence we currently live in. Hi, Mr. Attorney General, thank you for being on the show this afternoon.
Mark, thank you for having me on and covering this important story.
I mean, it's just shocking to me. I've watched it. I mean, the worst thing to me is I've made a living for the last 39 years representing people with traumatic brain injury. And you can hear on the video when her skull fractures, you can hear the thunk, and you can hear the whoever's doing that video groan as he realizes that what just happened was this young lady's life has been destroyed. Whether she recovers or not, her life will never be the same. And then there's, you know, the same week we've got Justin Brooks, 14-year-old middle school kid, stabbed to death up in North County. We've got the 22-year-old student just graduated from college who's the ex-girlfriend of a soccer player, run over and dragged under a vehicle for two blocks, horrible injuries. And in that case, she's dodging gunfire, and it turns out that the gunfire that she was dodging wasn't the guy that ran over her, but another random gun battle going on down the street. And, you know, this culture of violence is terrifying, and, you know, something has to be done. So tell us from the Attorney General's perspective what we can do to help this problem.
Yeah, well, first of all, Mark, covering these important stories is really critical so that the public sees just how bad things have gotten. Let me say first and foremost, my heart goes out to the victims. You know, there's a young woman who's still in critical care, who still has brain bleeding and brain swelling in a hospital in St. Louis from this violent attack near Hazelwood. There's a young man who was stabbed to death in Jennings and his head. There's a young woman who was drugged underneath a vehicle while trying to dodge a run and gun, you know, shootout in the streets of St. Louis who lost her life. This is tragic, you know, and it's a breakdown in the rule of law. And, you know, when you look at St. Louis and what caused this culture of violence, I think there's two things we need to address right off the bat. Number one, how long did Kim Gardner stay in office and refuse to prosecute criminals? This was a deplorable situation. So when it comes to the kids, these children and the adult criminals certainly as well have grown up seeing that the prosecutor wasn't going to do anything about the bad guys. And so they think they live in a consequence-free environment. But then secondly, you know, most of these folks live in a congressional district where they're represented by Congresswoman Cori Bush. This is a woman who has shamefully called for the defunding of police. Mark, you and your lovely wife have seen firsthand what happens when there's a breakdown in the rule of law. And when the mob takes over, people get hurt and property is destroyed. Thank God there are patriots like you and your wife to stand up and say no. And thank goodness we have laws on the books in the state of Missouri that allowed me to remove the Soros-backed prosecutor, Kim Gardner, from office in the city of St. Louis. That needed to be done, but we have more work to do. And what we've got to do is keep fighting to ensure that wrongdoers are held accountable. And I'll say this, when it comes to the juvenile criminals, if you are a teen who commits an adult crime, be prepared to do adult time.
Well, and one of the things that you can see in that video when Kaylee's getting her skull fractured is it's not just so one girl smashing her head in the pavement. Another girl comes up and kicks her in the head. And then there's fights going on left and right. Only one person, the St. Louis County prosecutors only charged one person with a crime. Everybody there is engaged in assault. Everybody there is engaged in criminal behavior. The only person that gets charged is the one that actually fractured Kaylee Gaines' head. And what's that teach everybody else? That if you don't commit attempted murder, you can get away scot-free with anything?
Yeah, I think that's exactly the problem that you've identified here. And let me say this as well. There's some additional facts that I think your viewers and listeners are going to want to know about. The fight took place at 2:30 p.m. on a Friday afternoon in broad daylight on a public street in close proximity to the school district where these students attended. And so, look, it's like a Gangs of New York style fight. And it is so discouraging to think that the fight got to the level where you see this violent assailant attacking the victim, repeatedly bludgeoning her head against the hard pavement. Even after she had rendered the victim incapable of resisting, she continues to pursue the violent attack. This demonstrates an intent to inflict serious physical injury at a minimum. That's a first degree assault, potentially an attempted murder. And under the law, there is no discretion here. The juvenile officer has to hold a certification hearing. But I agree with you. All of these juveniles should be under the jurisdiction of the juvenile court. Juveniles who are beyond parental control or who are demonstrating behavior injurious to themselves or the community fall under the jurisdiction of the juvenile court. And by having juvenile officers willing to intervene earlier on, we can prevent this kind of escalation in violence and put an end to this culture of violence.
Well, you know, just yesterday, this guy up in Detroit, this what's his name, Crumbly, gets convicted on four counts of negligent homicide because his kid, 3 years ago, shot some people at a school, right? On the theory that he should have known that his kid was violent and done more to protect the world against his son. What about the parents of these kids? I don't hear anybody clamoring for the arrest of the parents of these kids for leaving them or raising them in an environment where they think that extreme violence is a viable alternative. You know, I hate to play the race card here, but I suspect that if the races were reversed in this event, we'd see it on the front page of every newspaper all over the country for the next 6 months.
Well, I think you really hit on something there, Mark, and a couple points to make. Number one, let's talk about this attack and where it occurred in proximity to Hazelwood School District, where these teens were students. In 2021, Hazelwood School District made the conscious choice to promote radical progressive DEI programs that are intended to promote racial divisiveness. And the police department, the school resource officers said, well, we're not going to participate in that, and pulled their resource officers out of the campuses. So in other words, this school district has a history history of promoting radical, racially divisive DEI programs instead of the safety and welfare of the student body and these students. And one wonders what role that played. If you don't have police officers in the schools to detect, get an early warning signal on some of these fights, that's when it escalates to this level of violence. The school has culpability here.
And you know, schools are supposed to educate people and supposed to prepare them for life. But I took a look at it. The Hazelwood East School District has 5% proficiency in math, 21% proficiency in English. But what they did, they got an award for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And, there's just something bass-ackwards about that at an educational institution.
Yeah, that's right. The school district is clearly more concerned about indoctrination than education. And again, we see the disastrous results of these racially divisive programs. And when those programs are prioritized ahead of the safety and security of the student body, this video demonstrates what the disastrous results can be. And again, my thoughts and prayers go out to the victim who's still suffering. Victims in the state of Missouri have constitutional and statutory rights and criminal proceedings as well. And we need to make sure we're scrupulously honoring those rights, because that's really who's suffering here.
Well, I'm going to read you something. You probably haven't seen this. You may have. There's an article about the racial equity officer for the city of College Park, Maryland. Her name is Kayla Carter. She supports black liberation through revolutionary means and said she is working with some activists to plan, quote, how we will eat and live and grow after we burn it all down. She says that, why do black people always have to rationalize our violence and anger? Here's a person who is a public employee, the racial equity officer for a city in Maryland, who's advocating violent revolution against white people, burning the system down, and why should we have to apologize for our violence and anger as black people? I mean, this is, you got Maxine Waters, and you got Kamala Harris encouraging violent activity, encouraging violent behavior in the George Floyd era. You've got this lady in College Park, Maryland, advocating violent revolution. And these people are elected officials. I mean, if you subject your youth to an environment where they're taught that they're oppressed, that they're victims, and they have a right and a duty to act out violently, what else can we expect to happen?
Well, I think that's exactly right. And again, this has played out in history before. I mean, look at Germany in the 1920s and 30s. Well, at the rise of the Nazis, they had been subjugated, and that they had a duty to stand up and fight back for their race and to put their race above the others. I mean, that's exactly the kind of diatribe you saw from the Nazi party. And look at the disastrous results there. So there's a historical context here. We've got to stomp this stuff out now before more. Or violence occurs. This image, we're supposed to love one, destroy one another, and that's exactly what these DEI programs promote, is this kind of racial divisiveness. We got to put an end to it. It is illegal under the Missouri Human Rights Act and under our constitutional equal protection clause.
Yeah, you know, if I can find it here in a hurry, the thing that I found the most offensive is what the school itself said. Let me see if I can dig it up here.
Zero regard for the victim. They speak with no moral clarity at all. You're exactly right, Mark.
Here's the exact quote from Hazelwood East. It's a tragedy anytime children are hurt. Bullying and fighting in the community is an issue for which we all need to take ownership and work towards a resolution for the sake of our children. Not attempted murder, not the fracturing the skull of a person and continuing to bang their head into the pavement when they've already been rendered unconscious. Bullying. And then they say, we look forward to continuing to partner with our community for the sake of our children. Please be kind and respect the families involved during this difficult time and pledge to help work towards the betterment of our entire community. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I don't think we need to be kind and respectful of the family of somebody that raised this 15-year-old girl to try to kill her own classmate. These are not people that we need to be kind and respectful for. These are people that need to be called on the carpet. These are people that need to be held responsible for this incredibly violent behavior, that this cancer that's destroying our country from the inside out.
Yeah, I totally agree. Look, the school has culpability, as we've demonstrated through their promotion of racially divisive DEI programs at the expense of the safety of the children that they're responsible for. And I think this statement they've made, you know what? I've not been in politics that long, but this school district is really good at talking a lot and saying nothing. And that's what that statement represents. No regard for the victim. They lack any moral clarity on this issue. Shame on them.
Yeah. Well, and so assuming that you get reelected as Attorney General, what do you have coming down the pike that will help us with this problem?
Well, look, we're fighting and winning to protect Missouri. We're going to be at the United States Supreme Court on Monday in the case against big tech censorship in violation of the First Amendment, holding Biden accountable. We're going to bring home a win, anticipate a win on that in June. Just last week, we scored a win against the Biden invasion where we got an injunction to prevent President Biden from wasting your tax dollars to vex, harass, and delay the building of Trump's border wall. We know we've got the tools on the books now to reduce illegal border about, and we just removed prosecution across the state of Missouri by 133%. And a lot of that comes from removing Kim Gardner, who just wasn't doing anything at all, wasn't protecting victims. 96% on the gender mutilation clinics across the state. You like us removing the Soros back prosecutor, then I'm asking you to come out for and vote for Andrew Bailey on August 6th in the Republican primary. Where, like I said, I'm a warrior in the fight for freedom, safety, and prosperity, and I'm running on a record. We're going to continue fighting and winning for the people of the state of Missouri.
Well, Attorney General, I sure appreciate it. And could you tell us how we can help out your campaign?
Yeah, appreciate prayers and support. Check us out at BaileyMo.com. That's BaileyMo.com, BaileyMo.com. Sign up to help us out. We need volunteers. We're going to be in every county across the state of Missouri. I was in Poplar Bluff on Monday, Jeff City Tuesday, Springfield on Wednesday, St. Louis on Thursday. I'm in Columbia today, and we're getting a lot of enthusiasm. So join the team, join the movement, help us fight and win for the people of this state.
All right. Well, keep up the good work. Good luck in the Supreme Court, and I hope to have you back on the program, and keep up the fight for the people of Missouri.
God bless you, Mark. Talk soon.
Take care. Well, that's Andrew Bailey, the Attorney General of the state of Missouri. I mean, I've lived in the city of St. Louis for the last 34 years. I grew up in the St. Louis suburbs where, you know, we didn't lock our doors. We left the keys in the car. Wasn't much of an issue. But in 34 years living in the city of St. Louis, it is a war zone. I mean, it is such a war zone that people that live in the civilized world probably can't imagine it. We had, for example, this week, Kaylee Gaines' head smashed in by a schoolgirl in a coma, brain bleed, brain swelling, frontal lobe injury. This young lady, if she survives, will never be the same, and our heart goes out to her and her family. Same week, we've got a 14-year-old boy stabbed to death on his way home from a school in the same basic neighborhood. We've got the soccer player's girlfriend, 22-year-old girl from England. She's coming out of a nightclub in a place they call The Grove, which is just, you know, not very far from my office. She hears gunfire breaking out, so she crouches down behind a car, or in front of a car, rather, to avoid getting shot. And the car takes off, runs over her, drags her for two blocks. Horrible, horrible injuries. She'll never be the same. The gunfire ends up not being related to the person that ran over her. In the city of St. Louis, having random gunfire in the middle of the night is so common. The cops originally thought that the guy that ran over her was involved in the gun battle and was trying to get out of the way, but it turns out they're unrelated. The guy that was unloading his gun down the street was just shooting at some people who were trying to get into his car because they were drunk enough to think it was their car. So he's shooting at him. At the same time, this other person is running over this 22-year-old girl and dragging her two blocks. The problem with this world, ladies and gentlemen, is that it was a car's fault, right? We have to outlaw cars because cars are dangerous. It was a gun's fault. Well, here in Canada, they've solved the problem. Thieves have been breaking into houses to steal keys in order to steal cars, prompting a controversial prevention advice from the Toronto police. They're advising people to leave their car keys near the front door of their houses so they did not have to confront violent criminals who, he noted, often have real guns. To prevent the possibility of being attacked in your home, leave your car keys on your front door because they're breaking into your home and steal your cars and they don't want anything else. A lot of them, they're arresting, have guns on them. And they're not toy guns. They're real guns. They're loaded. the cop ads. Well, we've disarmed the Canadian people, and now we're telling them, leave your keys outdoors so they can take your cars, because if you try to save your car, they'll shoot you, and we've kept you from defending yourself. Well, ladies and gentlemen, don't let that happen here.
This is Mark McCloskey on Fire. For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.